Welcome to All Business No Boundaries, a collection of supply chain stories by DHL Supply Chain, the North American leader in contract logistics. I'm your host, Will Haywood. This is a place for in-depth discussions on the supply chain challenges keeping you up at night. We're breaking beyond the boundaries that are limiting your supply chain. Today's episode is Connecting in Crisis, the Disaster Relief Supply Chain. Our guests are Dean Sweeberg, Director of Logistics, Disaster Cycle Service, American Red Cross, Emily Fortman, Division Disaster Executive, American Red Cross, Humanitarian Services, and Mark Kunar, Executive Vice President, DHL Supply Chain. Let's dive in. Welcome to you all, and thanks for being here. We've been looking forward to recording this episode for some time. This is an interesting partnership that we have with a great organization, which we'll learn about in the next 20, 25 minutes or so. So to start, as we always do, what I'd like to do is just go around and ask you to introduce yourself, the organization that you work with, and what your role is there. And Emily, could you kick us off?
Absolutely. Thank you. I am Emily Fortman, and I have the honor of being the Division Disaster Executive for the Central Atlantic Division for the American Red Cross.
Okay, good. Dean, how about you?
Yeah, thanks. Dean Sweeberg. I'm the Director of Disaster Logistics for the American Red Cross.
And Mark?
This is Mark Kunar. I'm the Executive Vice President for DHL Supply Chain, and I work with our strategy, marketing, and a couple of our business units.
Good, good. Well, thanks for being here today. American Red Cross, I think, is a pretty familiar organization to most people out there. But as I looked at the website in preparation for this, it's a somewhat more complex organization than I had initially thought. So Dean, maybe could you just give us sort of a roadmap or an overview of the organization and how it serves various constituencies?
Yeah, well, that's good. It's funny, I travel a lot for work in my role as Director of Logistics. And as I'm in the airport or on a plane or what have you, I meet just random people. And they tell me, after they hear that I'm with the Red Cross, they tell me their own Red Cross story. And I find that most people have one of those sort of Red Cross stories, whether it's their kids taking swimming lessons from the Red Cross, or they had a loved one who was impacted by a home fire and the Red Cross was responding and assisting them. You know, the Red Cross provides a variety of services, which you hinted at. So we got our disaster relief services that certainly I'm very familiar with. We collect about half of the nation's blood supply and provide that life-saving work. We also provide a lot of services to members of the armed forces and just provide that life-saving work throughout health and safety, CPR lessons, all of those kind of things. So happy to talk about the breadth of the Red Cross, but also looking forward to talking about the specific sort of work we do in logistics and disaster.
Great. You guys are with the American Red Cross. How's it linked to the international organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. So nearly every country around the world has a Red Cross or Red Crescent Society. And so we're part of this international movement of Red Cross societies. So there's an American Red Cross, there's a Canadian Red Cross, a Japanese Red Cross, you know, and so on and so forth. And we have this international brand that allows us to work together as national societies around the country. Just for example, we recently were responding to a typhoon in Guam, which is part of the American Red Cross because it's a U.S. territory. And I reached out to our partners in Kuala Lumpur with the Red Cross there because they had a warehouse that was geographically much, much closer to Guam than we were from the continental U.S. And so I was able to work with the International Red Cross to get supplies pulled from their warehouse and flown over to Guam and really get things kicked off there. So it's just a recent example of some of the work that we've done and that we continue to do around the world.
Yeah, logistics in action. Mm-hmm. Emily, on the humanitarian side of the organization, can you give us an overview of that, please?
Sure. I've had the same experience as Dean. I've been with the American Red Cross for almost 20 years. I started as a volunteer, and I remember coming into this organization that I knew in principle, but I didn't know the details and the breadth of the services and the impact that not only the American Red Cross has, but the international movement. Within the American Red Cross, we internally call our lines of service slightly different things so we can differentiate a little bit. So we have biomedical services, which Dean alluded to, that's collecting the life-saving blood. And then we've got training services, which is really the facilitator of CPR, first aid, AED, babysitting classes. And then we have the other arm, humanitarian services, which I've spent all of my time in the 20 years I've been with the American Red Cross. And that umbrella of humanitarian services is really where we're doing a lot of that direct mission delivery. So disaster cycle services, which Dean alluded to, service to the armed forces also, which he mentioned, international services. So that international connection that we have with our partners and some of the services that we deliver overseas live in that humanitarian services part too. Volunteer services, obviously we're an organization that is 90% volunteer. So that volunteer services part of our organization sits under our umbrella, vitally important to the work that we do. And within disaster cycle services, where Dean and I spend a lot of our time and our effort to try to help people, we really want to be a motivator for change, a community mobilizer, and providing that service equitably. So really getting to those most in need first, the quickest, so that we can alleviate some of their suffering. And then even within disaster, it's not just response. It's not just the big disaster relief operations, Guam, the Hawaii wildfires, anything from Hurricane Katrina to Hurricane Sandy, everything in between. We do that, but we're also responding to home fires every single day across the country and territories, about 60,000 times a year. I did the math once on that. It rounds out to be quite an impressive number when you think about the number of Red Cross volunteers who are mobilized every day. And we're providing people in the middle of the night. We might be the only people they see that can really help them, get them some assistance. We provide shelter, food, disaster health and mental health services. And then, of course, the generosity of the American people. We can have some long-term recovery money committed to a community for the long haul. And Kentucky is part of the territory that I support in the Central Atlantic. And during the tornadoes of December 21 that devastated many parts of Western Kentucky and other neighboring states, the generosity of the American people was so outstanding that we are really able to invest in those communities long term and drive that needle to lower poverty. And then lastly, within that disaster umbrella, we've really undertaken an effort to focus on what we're calling community adaptation. And that's really trying to go into a community and help identify hyper-local kinetic partners who are focused on things that are always a struggle for the people we serve, something related to healthcare, housing insecurity, and hunger. And a great example of how we might partner in those situations is finding a food bank who is that source of food and stability in a community that people count on every day of the year. If they're under capacity or they're struggling to keep up and meet a need, perhaps there's an opportunity for us to partner with them and maybe we can augment what they're doing, provide another refrigeration unit, sort of supplement what they're doing on a daily basis so that when a disaster does happen in that community, they're more likely to stay open and reduce the need for people to be food insecure or have to find assistance somewhere else. So a lot of work, but there's a lot of need in the community. And that's what drives us every day in humanitarian services.
Yeah, thank you. That's really impressive. Mark, how does DHL fit into the discussion here? And what's the relationship that you guys have with the Red Cross?
So overall, DHL and the DHL group, one of their focus areas is humanitarian logistics. So internationally, you can see those with teams like our disaster recovery teams, who are often some of the first people into countries where they have major natural disasters. So our partnership with the American Red Cross here in the United States was just a logical way for us to get involved in those areas within the U.S. So we provide a number of logistics skills to the American Red Cross on an as-needed basis, but we also sponsor the Blood Cross blood drives. Our sites are involved, our headquarters are involved in that mission. We support, obviously, financially, the Red Cross as well. And then personally, I'm involved with the Red Cross as a board member of the Greater Columbus, Ohio area, where I generally focus is in the Biomedical Services Committee and the missions that they have as well.
Great. So Dean, on the logistics side, Emily outlined a number of examples where you guys are responding in the moment. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you go to work on sort of a day-to-day basis, thinking about pre-planning or preparedness versus in the moment when you have to hop to and respond to an event.
Great question. Actually, I was in one of our local regions, and we have about 50 of these across the country. And these local regions, of course, as Emily talked about, were 90% volunteer-led and supported. So these regions are around the clock, you know, around the year, training, recruiting new volunteers. Maybe some of your audience would like to become a Red Cross volunteer. We'd love to have them. They get trained in our various disaster services.
Sorry to interrupt you. If somebody did want to become a volunteer, what should they do? Website or?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a toll-free number, 800-RED-CROSS. The most popular way, of course, is our website, redcross.org. And you can click on volunteer, and a few clicks later, you'll be in a class.
If I could expand on that,
sure.
We are really looking for people who are interested in serving in logistics roles on our disaster relief operations. And so that's a capacity that we continue to build. And you don't even have to have a logistics background, but if you do, we'd really love to meet you and get you into our volunteer cadre. So lots of stuff for a lot of people, but certainly with the logistics focus we're interested in too.
And what kinds of activities would they be doing, Emily?
Dean, I'm going to let you respond to that one. You've got a lot of experience specifically there.
Yeah, sure thing. So like I said, when I started with the Red Cross, I was leading one of our local offices. And so we'd have volunteers come in all the time and with different backgrounds, right? Some of them knew logistics. Some of them were nurses or teachers or anything, right? So you come in, you find a place where you want to bring your interests and your talents to the Red Cross. And because of the various services that we offer following disasters, everything from delivering hot meals to operating shelters and giving people a place to stay and sleep when their home is inaccessible or worse, everything from moving the supplies, the stuff that I work with, the logistics all the time, there's a home at the Red Cross for any type of volunteer. And so when you sign up with the Red Cross, you'll get to meet with a volunteer coordinator. They'll sort of explain the different parts of the Red Cross disaster-wise. Whether it's you want to help out in your local area, that's great. We respond to 90% of those 60,000 disasters every year are single-family fires. So that means that a team of Red Cross volunteers is going out to the family's home in the middle of the night to offer them some support and a place to stay and some financial assistance. It also means that when we have large disasters, you can be part of our national network and go to the scene of the disaster and drive a response vehicle to hand out hot meals, right, to people that are cleaning up. So there's a lot of different things that a volunteer can do. If you're not able to volunteer because of your work schedule, we'd love to have your financial contribution also on redcross.org, because that allows us to really bring the resources of the Red Cross to bear. We're responding to all these different types of disasters and sizes of disaster. The nice thing is the Red Cross, because we're not a government agency, we're an independent nonprofit, we rely on those donations not only to respond, but it also gives us a lot of flexibility so that we can respond where we see need. We don't have to wait for a declaration or any kind of official notice of a disaster. We have our own network of teams that look for these things. And then, of course, larger disasters like hurricanes, wildfires, and tornadoes and things like that require us to really mobilize logistically in a big way and moving, you know, 53 footers full of cots and blankets and kitchen, mobile kitchens, and, you know, you name it, right? So we really require a vast network of volunteers and donors to fund that mission. The bottom line is that the Red Cross is proud to be there, not just in the local community, but around the country.
Great. So I sidetracked this and apologies for that, but I want to get back to the preparedness versus response and how that factors into your day job.
Yeah.
Dean, yeah, and I think maybe you could highlight complexities of the island operations too, being maybe a little different than on the continental U.S.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple things on that. Well, with preparedness, one of the things that we, of course, do year-round is maintain our supplies of the things that we need to provide that shelter and the feeding and the other services. So everything from a network of warehouses around the country, we call them disaster field supply centers, we have strategically placed. We talk a lot about speed to market and how quickly we can get our supplies to the scene of a disaster when it occurs. We also talk a lot about speed to scale and how we can scale up that operation and bring in additional support from elsewhere around the country. And so preparedness is, for us, and my role at least, is all about making sure that we have the supplies, the resources, the people, the relationships, partners like DHL and others that can come in and support the Red Cross as we deliver those materials and deliver that support. There's also, of course, the other side of it, which is the tactical movements around a disaster and in response to a specific challenge, to Emily's point, right, with an island operation. We've now actually responded to several island responses this calendar year alone, with Hawaii experiencing fires, with Guam experiencing now multiple typhoons, with Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands being threatened multiple times. So that requires a whole separate set of unique challenges that we have to overcome. Everything from working with not just, hey, what are our supplies on the island? How are we going to get additional resources there? Obviously, we can fly things in. We can utilize our ocean shipping. We can work with partners and even industry to see what sort of resources they can offer us. So it really requires a diverse set of solutions to meet the needs, especially when you're talking about an island geographically separated. You know, we can't just push a few buttons and roll 153-foot semis down the road to an island. So it really requires some unique solutions.
Yeah, interesting. So, Mark, with some of the stuff that you outlined that DHL does more broadly, and then in specific with the Red Cross, are there examples that you can think of where the group has supported in response to a big or small kind of disaster?
Yeah, and Dean mentioned it. I think one of the most important things in this is that we contribute financially every year, because the Red Cross does need funds in order to carry out its mission. So last year, the DHL Supply Chain Group donated $250,000 to the American Red Cross. And I think that's important for us to continue to allow them to do their mission. In addition to that, we see really just coming alongside of the American Red Cross and providing help. You know, for example, we've donated 4,000 service hours for our employees that were on the clock and helped pick, pack, and ship supplies at their Atlanta warehouse, their Carlisle, PA warehouse, their Dallas warehouse. So we're providing supplemental support into those facilities with skilled warehousemen within that context. And then over the years, we take on a number of different projects that we've worked with the American Red Cross, everything from evaluating the safety of the dock and doing an analysis of the receiving areas in their blood delivery areas, just to make sure that their employees are safe and ours are safe in those areas. We've conducted an analysis of the blood kitting operations used to support the Red Cross drives. And then we back that up also with helping with just the kitting, our employees helping out. And recently we did that activity where we had 480 employees providing over 700 volunteer hours to assemble over 30,000 blood kits. So we try to help in a fashion that's most effective for us as the logistics professionals that we are in the supply chain company for the world.
Great. And so, Dean, being on the coordinating side from the Red Cross, how do you find corporate partners and then work with them to bring about the services that you need to deliver?
It's a good question. We do have a team that works day in and day out with donors, because we're always looking for in-kind donations of not just products, but also services. And the partnership with DHL is a great one, right? We've been working with DHL since 2019 to scale up our operations. And as Mark talked about, everything from pulling pallets and running forklifts to building out our kitted trailers that go out and support field kitchens and shelters and so on. So as far as finding corporate partners, it's really a matter of building relationships. And that's what we try to do at the Red Cross, so that we have those. We're not exchanging business cards at the time of a disaster, but rather we have worked out memorandums of understanding and have those relationships fleshed out to the point where we know the partners know what we do. We know what they can bring to bear. And then it's just a matter of activating those plans. And it's incredible to see it in action. And that's why I really encourage anyone with an interest in either building out their resume or just doing something good to jump on our website and maybe see about becoming a volunteer, because it's an incredible thing to witness.
Yeah, but a lot of work goes in to be ready, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's not just the partnerships, there's all the planning, the work that goes into it, meetings, trainings, et cetera.
Good. Emily, I just want to close out and sort of pull back to, at the end of all of this are people, right? And they're usually people who are not having a great day. Just wonder if you could share a story or two from your career of how you had a positive effect in a bad situation or by doing what you guys do well.
to speak specifically about the importance of the logistical piece to this and partners is without those supplies, we can't effectively assist people. And you're thinking cots, blankets, durable medical equipment, hygiene supplies, all of these things that people need when they leave their home with nothing but their lives is what we actually have to get to them. And if we can't get those supplies to where those people have evacuated to, then they're going to suffer. And so the importance of being ready, of pre-positioning things in the right place, having effective partnerships, having good supply chain practices and procedures, all of those things are really important. But at the end of the day, it is about the people. And I can think of dozens of examples where we had warehouses full of stuff that we requested, stuff that was just dropped off. But having the workforce, having people, partners, volunteers, people that just want to help other people come and actually say, what can I do? Can I move those pallets? Can I lift those boxes? Can I hand out water? All of those things are going to make someone else's day a little bit better, especially when they've been impacted by probably the most horrible thing they've ever experienced. And I know that people are being helped by the American Red Cross, and we're so diligent to make sure that the donated supplies and the donated dollars are being used effectively. And I know that there are practices that Dean's put into place, things that I do when I lead operations, to really make sure that we're helping people in the way that they need to be helped. I'm thinking of a warehouse that we had during Hurricane Harvey in Houston, Texas, and we had volunteers who lined up and they were putting together these totes because there was going to be a drive-through assistance center. So people who had been impacted by the disaster could drive their vehicle through. And then there were different aid agencies that had things. FEMA had some supplies there. But these volunteers spent all night in really hot, humid conditions, not a comfortable time to be in Texas and Houston in late August. And they spent all night putting together these things of donated items that people had brought just out of the goodness of their heart. They were things that were really going to help these people get to the next step of their recovery. So everything that we do with our partners, with our volunteers, it makes a difference, whether it be at home, in your backyard, in Columbus, Ohio, or in Houston, Texas, or in Guam. Each of those things is making a big difference.
Yeah, that's great. And thank you to the Red Cross for all that you do. And thanks to all of you for joining us today to give us some insight into how it is that you provide the great services that you do for people. I wish you all the best. I hope you don't have much work to do on the disaster front, but if it comes, you'll be ready.
Well, thank you very much. It takes the whole community, and we're glad to be partnered with DHL and all of our other partners, both private, nonprofit, government. It takes a whole community, a whole village to get this done.
And we're certainly happy to be part of the American Red Cross family and doing the things that our employees do every day to make what is often those very difficult times for folks, hopefully somewhat better.
Excellent. Well said. Well, thanks to you all. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate us and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also re-listen to our entire library of episodes on our website, dhl.com/ABNB podcast. See you next time.